This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast number 431. We are the Fight Disciples. This one's dedicated to the world of boxing. And I tell you, Summer, have we got a show lined up for you, because there's so much boxing to get stuck into. Action-packed weekend, loads to talk about, loads of talking points, and I've no doubt you're thirsty to talk about it as well. If it's the first time you've ever come across us, you can get us on iTunes. Fight Disciples is what you're looking for. And our website is fightdisciples.com if you need an Android feed, Spotify. If you need any of our social media links, if you need our YouTube page, if you need our shop, because I saw that quite a few people were enjoying the old proper tackle at the weekend, getting stuck all in there, weren't they, eh? Still no news on the second glove, by the way. The first glove, signed by Stipe Miocic, has been acquired by one of our listeners. The second glove, still out there. So if you're thinking of buying 24 packs of proper tackle, get yourself stuck in. You're going to need some of them cans, because there's a lot of fights coming up over October. Obviously, Fight Island in the UFC, and we've got that super fight between Lomachenko and Lopez coming up on the 17th of October. And the finisher, I mean, you're going to need at least 48 cans for Halloween, aren't you? With Derek Chisora and Alexander Usyk. You're going to need a few of them.
Oh, yes.
So make sure you get stuck into that by going to our website, fightdisciples.com. Wow. What a weekend, mate, eh?
What a weekend indeed. This was like my perfect weekend, because it was body shot central. Body shot central.
Yeah.
Do you know what? There was that many fights on. There was that many big performances. We should start by saying, what was your favourite fight? What was your favourite performance? Maybe what was your favourite finish? We'll dig into them all, but just those three. Answer me those three questions. What was your favourite fight? Mm-hmm. Favourite performance? Favourite finish?
Favourite fight, Jermell Charlo.
Yes.
Against Rosario. I thought that was fucking sensational at times. Rosario was, even though he got flattened, was well in the fight. 2, 3, 4, and 5. So I would go with that. That might be my favourite finish as well, you know. What was the other ones? Fight, finish, and what? Performance. I'm going to go for Bellota. Did you see that fight on the undercard of Josh Taylor? He was fighting.
Yes.
He was fighting Oliver, wasn't he? And he absolutely threw the kitchen sink at him. And
he was boss.
Mate, he just fucking came in like a Tasmanian devil. I thought that was outstanding, that performance against Davey Oliver Joyce. Really good. So I'm going to go Bellota performance, which is maybe harsh on quite a few other great performances, because I thought Jermall Charlo was really, really good against Derevianchenko.
That was my favourite performance.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'll go Bellota performance just because it maybe surprised me a bit. I'll go Jermall Charlo for the other two for finish and fight.
Jermell against Rosario.
Oh, sorry, Jermell, yeah, against Rosario.
Jermell. Yeah. I'm going my favourite... My favourite performance was actually Marius Briedis.
Was
my favourite performance. Yeah, I just thought he looked great, because people thought that Dortcus was going to win. People thought that was a 50-50 fight, even though we called it and we said that Briedis was a far better boxer and that he was going to turn up, and he delivered in fashion, and that was part of my acca, that Briedis on points was definitely the way to go. That was my favourite performance.
I've changed my mind. On knockout. Did you see Tony Yorker's knockout of Belfast? That was a banger on it. I'm going with that.
Yes.
That was a belter.
Hergovic as well. Did you see Hergovic's finish as well?
Mate, there you go.
Hergovic's right hand, actually. That was my finisher. That was my best performance. Yeah, my big finish. Yeah, man. The beauty of it is, we're flicking there from about 5 or 6 fight cards.
Yeah.
Just as we said last week, boxing is back up off the canvas, that coronavirus canvas, back on its feet, comes out swinging. And to be honest, you know, take away a couple of phantom body shots, it was a hell of a weekend for boxing. I've never seen two more unusual body shots, but when you watch them back and you replay them, both the Charlo body shot finish and the Josh Taylor body shot finish, they're soul snatchers. They're like... They're absolutely finishing shots. They don't look like much. One looked like a jab. One looked like a little choppy hook on the inside. Both of them didn't look like good enough to finish fights. But in both cases, when you spoke to the Charlos afterwards, and in the Charlo case, when you spoke to Rosario afterwards, they just said, man, that just snatched my soul away. There's nothing I could do. couldn't get back up.
I think in the Charlo one, I think Rosario was still buzzed after the six, you know. He got put down at the end of the sixth, didn't he? And I think that he was still in a little bit of a mess, and he was kind of on autopilot a little bit through the seventh, surviving and not fully at it. And you're right in what you said, that it's a jab body shot, isn't it? But I think the work that had been done previous, because he was down early, mate. He was down in the first round when he was down at the end of the sixth, and then he obviously the situation in the eighth. I think that was just an accumulation of getting to that point. To the finish. The Josh one, like you say, you need a certain angle to appreciate Josh Taylor's shot, because the original angle that I saw it on the TV screen, I thought, what the fuck's happened there? It was weird the way that the kid just dropped, because I didn't even see it. But then when you actually look at the shot from behind, a different angle, Josh, his feet are perfect. The way that he sinks the shot's perfect. Everything about it's just perfect. And it was like he had an off switch, wasn't it? He's just obviously hit a button. And the kid just can't, he can't move. He's been paralysed with the shot.
Yeah, man, he's touched the soul. And that's the best thing about a body shot. And that delayed reaction always makes body shots even better, in my opinion. So, listen, like you, both of them were just heavily debated online. People going, what the fuck was that? Even the commentary for the BT one. You know, Carl Frampton, who, by the way, was brilliant on comms. You need to use Carl Frampton more. I think he's fucking awesome. Certainly the best on that desk. And even Frampton was like, it was just a weird reaction afterwards, wanting the stretcher. The way he got out the ring, lay on his back and then rolled under the ropes and everything. You're like, come on, mate. And then, you know, in the aftermath, he said, oh, he hasn't got any broken ribs. He hasn't got any internal organ damage. And you're like, you know, that was a big reaction then for someone that should be used to taking body shots, that should be, you know, it just makes the performance, it takes something away from Josh Taylor's performance, I think, because of the way Kong Song reacted to that body shot and subsequently seemed to milk an injury in terms of that body shot. Now, that might just be embarrassment. The guy's 16-0. It's never happened to him before. Maybe he's embarrassed. And anyone who watched the fight, you can't watch that fight and go, you know, initial reaction might be, guy's 16-0, paper record, never fought anyone. Josh's career, 16 fights that he's had have been unreal. He deserves a knockover. But actually, when you watch the fight and watch the fight live like we did, I was impressed with Kong Song up until that point. Up until that point, he looked good. He had a fast right hand. He was big, and big fucking hell, for a super lightweight, he was massive. And it's just a shame for him that it ended in that way. And listen, again, let's just go back to the fundamentals of it. Take nothing away from Josh Taylor's performance. That shot, and Josh said it himself when he got a microphone put in his face afterwards. He said, as soon as I got it in there, it was done. Soon as I sunk it in, it was so deep. As soon as I hit him, I knew he was done. He knew. It was just a perfect, perfect shot.
Listen, I'm not going to hate on anything at this. I know that there's loads of reaction on social media and what have you, but you're talking about a guy in Josh Taylor whose last five opponents have had a record of 110-1. Coming into fights with him, you know, and that one was Terence Crawford beating Victor Postol. That is ridiculous, the level of opponents that this lad has been fighting. You know that he's absolutely thirsty to be fighting Jose Ramirez. That's what he wants to do next. He wants to try and become the undisputed super lightweight champion before his 20th fight, which is just, when you think about it, it's absolutely ridiculous. He's not a Frank Warren fighter, he's a top ranked fighter. But Frank and BT Sport were helping ESPN and Bob out at the weekend by getting Josh some work, because they needed to get the mandatory situation out of the way in order to be able to move forward. I've seen Bob throwing shade on this particular fight, and I personally think he's coming from an angle of trying to make the Jose Ramirez fight. I don't think he's throwing too much shade for the reasons that Kong Song... I don't think he's saying that Kong Song were any good. I think he's being able to use the 2.5 minutes or whatever it was for this particular fight in order to try and get us, the fans, the fight that we all want. And that's no disrespect to Jack Catterall. Everybody knows what I think about Jack. Everybody knows that I picked him as one of my prospects, what were it, 3-4 years ago now. And he's most certainly earned the right to be fighting Jose Ramirez. There's no doubt about that. But if we take a step back from what he's deserved and what he's earned in boxing, the fight that every single fan wants to see is Josh Taylor and Jose Ramirez. We want to see undisputed champions at whatever weight category. And it would be a shame if we've got to wait a little bit further because we've got mandatory situations to get out of the way. We're experiencing that at heavyweight, aren't we? We don't want that. Let's just get the best guys in against the best guys as soon as we possibly can. And if these two both want to do it, let's dance. Let's get it on.
Okay, watch this. Woo! This is me turning my hat round. Now I'm team Jack Cattrall.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit. I've been waiting so long to get a title opportunity against Ramirez. I'm the number one contender. I will not step aside money because guess what? Ramirez in his last fight looked beatable. I am Jack Cattrall. I can beat Ramirez. Let me fight Ramirez next at the start of the year. Josh Taylor can cool his hops because guess what? Once I beat Ramirez, then me and Josh Taylor is a battle of Britain of AJ, Fury, super lightweight proportions. Everyone can get behind that. England versus Scotland. Now we've got a super fight just for the UK. Stop pushing Ramirez towards Josh Taylor. Let me, Jack Cattrall, take what is rightfully mine first. And we'll build towards an All British Super Fight 2 for 2021. There you go. That's Jack Cattrall's statement on the matter. Turn me hat back around.
Mm. And you're right. You're right.
Yeah, man.
You're absolutely right. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out. I just want to see all the belts on the line at super lightweight because we're on the cusp of something really, really special. And Josh Taylor, for me, is the most special fighter that Britain has right now. And I'm throwing everybody in there. The Tyson Furies of this world, the Josh Warringtons of this world, Frampton, Billy Joe Saunders, Callum Smith. Josh Taylor is the best fighter we have in Britain right now. And he's proven it time and time again by going in against elite level opposition. And fingers crossed that continues for him. Top guy, top fighter, yes, right behind him. And hopefully we'll be allowed to have fans back in soon, mate, as well, so we can actually get to a fight and get back on the train, because the progress fight that we both attended was absolutely outstanding, wasn't it? It was a different unreal level. What did you make of Charlie Edwards? Because he made his debut at bantamweight, didn't he, at the weekend? And he's obviously the former flyweight champion. He's moved away from flyweight, moving up two weight categories. And for me, yeah, he's taking on Carl Williams, who was the former English bantamweight champion, a lad that has been a world kickboxing champion. So we know he's tough as they come. It just felt to me, watching the fight, that Charlie wasn't a bantamweight. He was winning the fight. He was, when it comes to a skill level, he was much better than Kyle. But I never felt during it that he could take him out, just because of the size and the toughness of Kyle Williams. It felt like to me that he'd maybe gone one weight category too much. Maybe he should just come back down and fight at Superfly.
Yeah, obviously the issue is here is that, you know, it comes down to financials. Let's be honest, when you drop into the flyweight and the Superfly divisions, your money drops dramatically as well. You know, there's a real lack of big name fighters down there. And
Chocolatito, Estrada, these guys.
Guys who are fucking punch like absolute freight trains. You know, they're just monster hitters, aren't they? They're just monster punchers. I think at bantamweight, there's way more options out there for them. There's way more opportunities out there for them, yeah, against names, a plethora of names rather than one or two killers. So yeah, I understand why Charlie's moved up, but you're right, man. This should be a little bit of a wake-up call to him, because Kyle Williams took his best and kept on coming. And I think someone with a higher skill level from Kyle Williams would take Charlie Edwards' best and be able to use their own skill set to really put it to him. So maybe it has been a little bit of a wake-up call for Charlie. But maybe, you know what? Maybe it's just the fact that Charlie, it was his first fight at bantam. Maybe Charlie himself just needs to settle at the weight a little bit more too. Mm. So be interesting to see what they do with him next. But, you know, from a guy that was a world champion to run into a very much a domestic level operator and have Kyle Williams showboating down the stretch, it's got to be something that, you know, comes on the radar and something to think about moving forward. Absolutely.
Mm. We mentioned Hergovic at the start of the show.
Luta.
What?
Luta was the start of that show though, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah. It was a great fight. Ian Baluta beating Davey Oliver Joyce was absolutely sensational. Filip Hergovic, I think his fight was in Denmark, wasn't it? Sensational knockout, yep, for him. But I just want to go World Boxing Super Series. And Brady Stortikos, because yes, we bigged it up last week. We said that it was going to be a mad fight, and it was a good fight. It was a captivating fight. Brady most certainly won it. I was gobsmacked when someone scored it 114 apiece. How are you watching that? Don't get me wrong, Stortikos had moments, and he won rounds. There's no doubt about that. But 114 apiece? Come on, man. What are we doing? What are we watching? Brady most certainly had won enough rounds before we got to the championship rounds, and then he won all the championship. That's what he does. He puts his foot down at the back end of the fight, doesn't he? And he runs away with fights. And that's what I think he most certainly did this time round.
Yeah. It was a very unusual decision by the judge to give it that way. He's an experienced judge as well. This guy was one of the judges for the Josh Taylor Baranchik fight as well. Jorge Michel, his name is. He's a German judge. Mm. You know, so it's not like he's a novice, but I've just got no idea. No idea on God's green earth how he scored that fight a draw.
Were you disappointed?
Absolutely no chance.
Were you disappointed with Dorticos?
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit because he
didn't go for it, man. At the end, when you know that you're getting outboxed and you've got that steel hammer in your hand, right? You know you've got it. Go for it, man. Go for it. It's the IBF Championship on the line. It's the World Boxing Super Series trophy. You know what I mean? The eyes of the world are watching in this crazy time. You've got to try and land. You have to. And he didn't really go for it for me, especially down the back end.
Yeah, he did the same thing though, didn't he, when he fought Gassiev. You know, against Gassiev, we were kind of waiting for him. Don't get me wrong, I think Gassiev's a much better boxer, but we were kind of waiting for him to pull the trigger, and he just did. You know, he got dropped twice in the 12th round, but by then he was miles behind on the cards anyway. So I just think he's weird. He's a weird one, Dorticos, because he looks the part and his knockout record speaks for itself. But, you know, for a Cuban to be outboxed there by a Latvian, who thought we'd see that, you know, from the Cuban school of science, absolutely outboxed by Briedis. But for me, Briedis is, you know, very much a different level. You know, you've got to put him at the top of the tree now in this cruiserweight division, and hopefully he gets the opportunities. The thing with Briedis is, if you can get past COVID and get to the situation where you put bums on seats again, that Latvian crowd, yeah, they man. Turn out in force for Briedis. So you can see unification fights with Makabu, Glowacki, you know, pull all these titles together. We may well be able to unify that belt again. And, you know, if you're someone like a Lauren Sokoli who's got aspirations in this weight division, might find himself in fucking having to go to Latvia to do the business.
Yeah, man. Speaking of which, Jose Burton were out there, weren't he? Did you watch it?
I did.
I've watched it retrospectively. I didn't watch it live at the time.
I didn't watch it live, no.
So I knew the result and I watched it. And from the very first moments of the fight, I've never seen Jose like that. He's never flat. He's always acting. You know what I mean? He's always outboxing people. Of course, people will refer back to the Frank Buglioni fight where he got chinned at the end. But he weren't flat. He was winning the fight comfortably. He just looked, I don't know, it was rehydration, the atmosphere, the experience of going over there and fighting this guy. I don't know what it was. I've never seen him boxing on the back foot pot shotting. He's normally a guy that he puts combinations together. It just wasn't there for him.
Yeah, it was strange because, you know, I don't even think, in terms of going over there, obviously he's got Tyson with him and everything else. Yeah. Tyson Fury made the trip, which you would think would bring out the next level from him and really inspire him. And, you know, when you looked at Bolotnik's record as well, guy's not even a puncher. He looks like a monster, but he's not necessarily a big puncher. Mm. You know, he's only got 7 knockouts on his record. So Jose just seemed to be hesitant. He looked scared of getting involved. Whereas that's not the way Jose has made a name. That's not how he's built up his record. I know he's not the biggest puncher himself, but he's usually fucking game as anything, isn't he?
Yeah.
So I knew the result before I watched it, to be honest. And then I flicked it on and I didn't even watch the full 10 rounds. I probably watched 4 to 5 rounds and was just, you could see the writing was on the wall. And he'll kick himself. I think he'll look back, whether it's now, whether it's in a week's time or a year's time or whatever, I think he'll kick himself because Bolotnik's certainly nothing special. Hmm. And you know, I feel like Jose has took a real step back with this one. And it just felt like, it was the one that was flying under the radar, and I was secretly thinking, Jose Burton could steal the show here. He could get a massive knockout, steal the show on a massive weekend of boxing, and that's all we'll be talking about on Monday morning. And instead, I'd have been quite happy if we'd skipped over it.
Yeah.
Shame.
Well, a couple of fighters that have most certainly stepped up and proved that they can do it are the Charlo boys. I know that you've been on the Charlo train for a long time, right? I've been hesitant with it. Listen, I've been hesitant with it. I've been on the back foot with it. And the reason for it is because level of opponent that they've been fighting. These guys, they've got the mouth, haven't they? You stick them in front of a camera, you stick a microphone in front of them, they're captivating. You're thinking, right, lads, you can talk the talk. This is mega. But then when I see fights get made for them, whether it be at 154 or 160 or whatever it may be, I'm like, yeah, okay. sound, whatever. And sometimes, don't get me wrong, they went through a period of time where they were trying to outdo each other with highlight reel knockouts, weren't they? These corkscrew uppercuts and all this type of stuff. But there's been times where I've watched the Charlo boys and I've been totally uninspired by it. The Weeknd is totally different. Completely different. There was a massive opportunity for them both to make a bit of a name for himself with everything that's going on in America right now from a sporting point of view and a boxing point of view. They've been starved of real action, haven't they? The American audience have been starved of real action. I know that they were charged through the nose for this from Showtime. I think it was $75 for this pay-per-view. And it needed to live up to it. You look at the names that were on that card. It looked brilliant. It was most certainly the best one of the year so far for the American audience. And these lads, there was a lot of pressure on them. They've got to step up. They've got to do it. The fights on paper look great. You've got the Derevianchenko fight for Jamal, and you've got, obviously, Jamel's fight against Jason Rosario. I'll come to the Derevianchenko fight first of all, because we've all seen Sergey Derevianchenko against Triple G, against Danny Jacobs, against those guys, and we know what level he can compete at. So we knew it was going to be Charlo's first, in my opinion, first proper test. Let's see what you're all about, mate. You know what I mean? Let's see if you're the legit middleweight that you're telling us that you are. My word, right? Out of the two brothers, he's the better boxer for me. His jab was bang on. You look at Derevianchenko's face at the end of the fight and he's absolutely busted the shit out of him, hasn't he? Derevianchenko's game. He's constantly coming forward. He's making it a fight. Of course he is. And he's asking questions. That's what you wanted. You wanted Charlo to be asked questions during this fight. And he answered every single one of them. And he buzzed him a couple of times. He's a tough guy, he's Sergey, isn't he? You know what I mean? He buzzed him a couple of times and you think to yourself, whoop, what's going to happen here? And maybe if there was a little bit more in certain rounds where he's done him at the end of a round, he might have put his foot down and tried to take him out of there. But I thought, Jamal Charlo, that is the best he's ever looked. Sensational. And for me now, I know that DAZN and all this lot are chatting about Canelo Triple G 3, right? Now, I would rather see Charlo in with Triple G. That's what I would rather see than the Canelo fight.
Yeah, I think Charlo at the moment, you know, we just don't know what's happening with Golovkin at all. I don't think you can class Canelo as a middleweight anymore. You know, he's not the WBC middleweight champion. Jamal Charlo is. And the difference here, I think, was I felt like Jamal Charlo needed this to really prove himself as WBC middleweight champion. You know, he got the belt in the same manner that Devin Haney got the belt. Yeah. Devin Haney got the belt by email because they made Lomachenko franchise champ. Jamal Charlo got the belt exactly the same way because they made Canelo franchise champ. But the difference here for me is Canelo is no longer a middleweight. Canelo is looking to campaign at super middleweight, which means for me, this is just a vacant title. I now consider Jamal Charlo the full WBC middleweight champion, a true world champion. And for me, on activity alone, you know, you've got to put him up there alongside Golovkin as the best in the weight division. You know, you've got to ask that serious question of who is the best. And right now, Jamal Charlo is the more active fighter. Golovkin has looked like he's got signs of aging. For me, that's the fight out there. It's the biggest fight in the weight division to see who is the number one and who is the number two in this modern era, in this era right now, 2020 back end. So I hope he does get that fight. I know on the broadcast they were talking about Eubank Jr., and they were talking about Boo Boo Andrade because the PBC connections, and you know, it just makes those fights easier to make. But for me, the Golovkin fight's the one. That should be the one he's pursuing because, as you say, I've been on the Charlo train for quite a while. I truly believe these two, and I've said it on the podcast before, these two are the future of boxing in and around this weight division. I think the two of them have got absolutely so much potential. The problem is, I've been saying it for that long, the fucking motherfuckers are 30 years of age now.
Yeah.
They're not, you know, I can't talk about it like they're in the mid-20s no more because they're not. They're in the 30s. It's no longer a case of these two can do it. It's a case of these two have got to do it now.
Yeah.
Now, the argument is, obviously, Jamel Charlo's just unified the super welterweight division. He is the guy. He is the best light middleweight on the planet. He's got all the belts to prove it. You know, he's bounced back from that sole defeat in style. This stoppage of Rosario was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, as weird as the jab to the stomach was, you know, the two knockdowns and the third knockdown leading up to it proved everything you needed to know. And then Jamal, as we talk about before, whenever the two of them box, they always compete for the best knockout. And fuck me, did Jamal pursue that knockout against Derevianchenko? These two are red hot, red hot. And I just think, you know, it was a crime that we didn't get to watch them on any kind of TV network here in the UK because these are the type of fighters, this is the type of narrative that puts bums on seats in front of TVs. I can't believe BT or Sky or anybody else for that matter never picked this up, and why it ended up on Fight TV, a streaming channel. Absolute bollocks. Especially when you look at the undercard as well. You know, Lewis Nery going for a big knockout to try and pursue, you know, the fight with the monster himself. And Danny Roman was on this card as well. You know, that Figueiredo was in a world title fight. It was absolutely stacked. What more do you want? What more do you want from an international fight card than this? And the Charlos, for me, are the two guys. These are the two guys. And they're right. I think in the aftermath, they argued and said, we don't get the press we deserve. The ex-fighters don't talk about us like they should. The media aren't behind us like they should be. I agree. These Charlos should be fucking absolute superstars by now on both sides of the Atlantic. It's weird that they're not. I just hope they get the biggest fights coming their way in the next 12 to 18 months, because if you match these guys right, you know, if you get them in there with the likes of the Triple G's of this world, you know, and Charlo's obviously already cleaned up at super welter, but, you know, if he was to move up, there's a massive international fight there with Tim Tzu. Tim Tzu's red hot right now. Make that fight, you know, he looked amazing last time out. So there's some interesting fights out there for both of them, but unfortunately we never ever talk about them in the pound for pound conversation. And now they've got to be talked about in the pound-for-pound conversations.
I still think 154 is open. I think there's a lot of guys in there that could all beat each other. Even though he's got three of the belts, Jermell, I still think people like J-Rock and even Hurd and people like that are still in that conversation. There's still some great fights for him to be made. But you just made a great point about TV broadcasting there, because this was available on Fight TV, wasn't it? I know what you're thinking. What's going on here? Where's the boys? They were talking about fights literally 5 seconds ago, and then all of a sudden there's that lovely harpsichord music and it's the boys again, but they're not talking about fights. Listen, we've gone big time. You know how it is. People are now spending their hard-earned cash with us in order to advertise their products with the Fight Disciples. Why? Because not only are we with the two-time champions at the British Podcast Awards, it's just that there's more of you now than there was before lockdown. So people are trying to cash in on this. It's a numbers game. Just ask Conor McGregor. It's just business. And what we're doing right now is telling you to shave your balls with lovely people at Manscaped. Well, not with the lovely people at Manscaped, because that would be fucking weird if you're all sat there actually shaving your balls together, because that just doesn't sit right with me. Do it on your own. Get some of their product and get it via our link. You can go to manscaped.com and you can use Fight20. Nick, tell them about the benefits of having a shaven haven.
I'm telling you now, I am back, crack, sack, and rack completely bald. Every time I get in the shower, I just do the full Monty. I could do the luge without a tray right now. I am so smooth. I feel like $1 million. Get me to Fight Island. I'm ready for me all over tan.
So if you want to look like Nick P, a prepubescent 12-year-old, you're more than welcome to do so by getting stuck into manscaped.com. Use Fight20 to get yourself a discount. Now, back to the fights. This is going to upset you because Lomachenko Lopez hasn't been picked up by British TV yet.
Fuck off. That better be picked up. It's got to be picked up. I had this conversation with Barry Jones on Twitter. It's got to be picked up. This cannot be ignored. This fight cannot not be on British TV.
Well, at the moment it isn't, mate. I don't know if you saw Bob Arum. I think he gave an interview to Coogan and he was talking about pay-per-view and various things like that in Great Britain. And he's, listen, it's all right for Bob to sit there and get on his high horse and start throwing shade towards the British market when you've got ESPN, who are a global superpower, funding his biggest fight of the year in Lomachenko Lopez. That's the reason that it's not on pay-per-view or there. And it's okay. Listen, I'm all for that. Absolutely all for that. And I have been very, very vocal by saying, listen, our superpower here is Sky. And if they had any real proper love for boxing, they'd find a bit of change from behind the back of the sofa. They'd invest and they would be putting on, for example, Usyk Chisora on standard Sky rather than have to go into the pay-per-view model. However, we're in a situation, aren't we, where without live gear, we need to find some funds somewhere in order to pay these athletes to get them in the ring, to get the fights on that we want to go and see. Now, if it is a pay-per-view model, that we have to have here in the UK, then I'm all right with it. I'm okay with it because there's fights. I just want to see fights. And if the broadcaster is giving me the option, buy it or don't buy it, then I'm cool with that. I've got the option. I can decide not to if I'm not interested in the fight. But if I am interested in the fight, I'll spend me 20 quid and I'll go and watch it. Just like I'd spend me 40 quid in order to buy a ticket to go and watch it, you know? So yeah. I get where Bob's coming from. I get that he's taking this moral or righteous place in order to get on side with the fans. I get all that and I'm cool with it. But I think I'm also all right with where boxing's at right now in order to just make the fights. If it's got to be on pay-per-view, then sound, make the fights. But one thing that I will say regarding investment from television channels is, as you've just rightfully said, at the weekend, that card in America was outstanding. The fact that that was not on Sky or BT, ITV, or whoever else wants to get involved with fight sports was absolutely ridiculous. Ridiculous, because it would have done numbers. And I'm not talking pay-per-view numbers. I'm just talking about general numbers of which you can sell advertising around. It would have done numbers for you. For fuck's sake, if Conor McGregor's bloody sponsoring it, he's got bloody proper 12 whiskey on the bloody canvas or whatever he had on there, then you know that there's something in there. If he can work with Stephen Espinosa, then everybody can work with everybody. You know what I mean? You could get this shit on. And I just think... Yeah. Lomachenko Lopez is the biggest fight of the year. Forget your heavyweights, forget anything. That is the monster fight. It needs to be on British TV, no question about it. And if it means investing, invest. Do it. Bring it over here because so many people would stay up to watch it.
Do you think Lomachenko Lopez would work as a pay-per-view in the UK, even if they just took the US stream totally?
I don't want to give anybody any ideas, but yeah.
I think it would. I think if BT decided to run it as a pay-per-view, I think it would absolutely wash its own face. Don't get me wrong. I don't know the intricacies and the financials involved, but, you know, slap me and you in a studio somewhere at BT.
Look,
and we'll
at
do a
now,
little boxing show.
Look at you now.
Not a problem.
Touting for work. I like it, mate. There's always a hidden meaning. Listen, I don't want to give anybody any ideas about bringing that over and putting it on pay-per-view in the middle of the night, right? But just get it. Just for kudos for your channel. Just say, we've got Lomachenko Lopez. I'll tell you something.
Exactly. It's the biggest fight this year. It's the biggest fight in boxing this year. And if your channel is serious about boxing, you've got to be in the conversation to bring Lomachenko Lopez to the UK shores. Hmm. Otherwise, you're not servicing your core listeners, you know, your core viewership. Hmm. But every single boxing fan, even if you're a hardcore boxing fan or if you're a football fan that likes a bit of boxing, everybody knows who Lomachenko is. Everybody knows who Lopez is. Everybody knows this is for all the marbles in the lightweight division. Hmm. It makes absolute sense. I just, you know, I'll cut my fee, put me, Adam and Luke Campbell in a studio. We'll present it. We'll throw to the US feed, piece of piss. Not a problem. I'll tell you what, I'll waive my fee as long as I can drink proper tackle throughout the broadcast.
On TV. Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
The thing is, when you hear all these noises coming out of America about the types of fights that they want to make and that they want to stick on, that they want to invest in, for example, this week we've seen Conor McGregor, Manny Pacquiao, both going at it on social media saying that them two are going to be having a fight. That separately, I'll come to that in a minute, and I've no doubt we'll speak about it a lot on our UFC show. But when you hear that Floyd Mayweather's in proper conversations with a YouTuber to have a fight, I bet there's television channels falling over themselves in order to get that on there because they know full well the financial ramifications of the type of numbers that someone like a Logan Paul and Floyd Mayweather would bring to the table, which is ridiculous, really, because we spoke about it in the past. I have no problem with anybody making money out of this sport, none whatsoever. It all comes down to how it is billed. If you are selling it as elite level boxing, then you're insulting elite level boxers because it's not. Floyd Mayweather's going to have a little bit of a dance. Don't be telling us that Logan Paul's massive. He only needs to land once. He ain't going to, mate, he's not going to fucking hit him. Floyd's going to, if they make it, he'll have a little bit of a dance around and then he'll fucking take him out whenever he wants to take him out. It's a lot of bullshit. But bill it correctly to boxing fans, so therefore we all know the difference between the top stuff and the shit stuff. Because at the moment, broadcasters are actually merging the whole thing together.
Exactly. Logan Paul couldn't hit fucking Mayweather with a bag of gravel, let's be honest. But unfortunately, it will be sold as being something so much more. Stay a million miles away from it. Sky, BT, I implore you, Stay away from that
shit.
No, hang
on. No, I've no
go
problem.
After Loma, go after Lomachenko. Yes, go after a real fight.
That's fine.
Give us what we actually want. That is the best fight this year so far. More than likely going to be the best fight of the year. And I'm thinking about the heavyweights as well. The most competitive, the most alluring, the most exciting fight as a boxing fan of 2020 will be Lomachenko versus Lopez. If you love us boxing fans, if you want to invest in us, if you want our money, go after that fight aggressively because we need to see it. And we will champion you, celebrate you all over this show throughout. Bingo. What more do you need?
Listen, I'm with you 100%, but I've also no problem with him chasing the other stuff as long as it's billed right. Listen, it's a business, isn't it? People have got to make money. And if there's money there, then go make it, but bill it right. Don't be telling us it's elite level boxing when we know full well that it's an absolute lot of bullshit.
Speaking of bullshit, I'm trying to excuse itself as elite level boxing.
Go on.
Before we preview what's coming up this weekend.
Yeah.
Did you catch up with the latest from Julio Cesar Chavez fucking jacking in? Oh my God.
The best bit about
it. Did it again.
The best bit about it is that his dad's on the undercard and he wins. How old is Chavez Senior now in that exhibition?
About 79, I think.
He had a little bit of a knock. He won his fight, and then Junior on Friday night threw the towel in. When are people going to get wise to it? When are they going to get wise to when they see his name on the bill? It's just fuck off. Not interested anymore, mate.
Is he still working with Matchroom? Is he still got a tie with Eddie Aina? I doubt it now after that performance.
Mate.
But Chavez Junior quitting again, you know, quitting against a novice. Whatever. The best thing about that show actually was the dad, because did you see it when the referee at the end of the round tried to break it up and Chavez Senior and the fellow just still fucking laying into each other, throwing shots and everything? There must have been about 25 shots thrown after the bell. Brilliant. I love it.
November 14th is going to be Crawford Brook. I'm told that that's done. So I've no doubt in the build up to that, we'll speak to Kel. We'll have a little bit of a crack about it. I'm not going to mention this dude's name because I've made the promise, haven't we? We've made the promise not to mention this cheating scumbag's name. But I'm just going to talk about the excuse that we've all heard about this week. And we've had some cracking excuses in the world of boxing when it comes to PEDs, haven't we? You know what I mean? We've had Mexican meat. We've had nasal spray. We've had wild boy. And if you follow UFC, you'll know full well about the sex pill, the dick pill excuse. And we've had it this week in the world of boxing. Listen, what you've read, heard, or whatever is being said is bullshit. It's nonsense, right? He's a cheat at the end of the day. And I'd much rather cheats came out and owned the cheating and just said, listen, I tried to cheat. I got fucking caught. I've had my slap on the wrist or not slap on the wrist and we're cracking on. But I can't get out of my head, right? I can't get out of my head the thought process of dick pills, Viagra, and EPO teaming up. I mean, how much of a fucking stallion would you be if you were constantly hard and you had a tank on you that could go forever? Fucking hell, you'd be the ultimate porn star, wouldn't you? I can't get that out of my head. I'm thinking of having a go. I'm thinking of getting on the gear and seeing what Viagra and EPO as a combination does, mate. That'd be something else.
Absolutely terrifying, isn't it?
Mrs. C would be in for a wonderful night. I'd tell you something. She'd get at least 10 minutes rather than 5.
But you're looking at, you know, you're looking at a 300-pound man with that kind of energy as well.
Fucking hell, Jesus Christ. That's some hammer knocking in that nail.
I'm telling you, man, put rivets through steel. That fucker. But listen, hopefully that's where his future lies, you know, because
porn.
I'd be quite happy. I'd be quite happy if he went into porn and destroyed some people, you know, that'd be fine. I couldn't care less. As long as he's a million miles away from boxing, because we've said it before and I'll say it again. The first promoter, manager, broadcaster that gives that piece of shit work, get ready, because you're going to fucking get it, both battles.
Yeah.
Because we as boxing fans never want to see that cheating fat big baby bitch in the ring ever again. And if you try and cash in with him, be ready, son. Your ears will be burning because you're going to get it full throttle. The guy's a scumbag.
But if you're making a porno with him, we're in.
Bingo, you're in. Well, I'm not in. Let's be honest. Definitely not in.
No.
I'm definitely not in.
Fights this week. We've got a bit of midweek action, mate. Bit of Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah.
Bit of MTK.
My boy's out. Yes, golden contract finals.
You talking about Jazza?
Jazza Dickens, yeah, my boy Jazza Dickens is in action. Great fight with Ryan Walsh, absolutely brilliant fight. This is the final as well, isn't it? So is it a financial contract as well? It's a contract with a top promoter, which I'm guessing is Top Rank. With MTK's relationship with it, because they said a global promoter, so you know, I think by now we'd have heard if it was Eddie or Frank. So I'm guessing it's a big contract with Top Rank. Top Rank, and I think there's some financial benefit as well, 10, 20, 50, 100 grand or whatever it may be. So huge on the line for all these guys. I think Ryan Walsh, you know, and Jazza Dickens have both suffered. Well, Ryan Walsh especially has suffered in regards, he's just never been able to break higher than domestic level, never really had those opportunities. Jazza Dickens, of course, fought for a world title and his jaw broke by, you know, one of the best little men in the history of the sport, unfortunately. And again, has just never really been able to catch the eye of a promoter, broadcaster to really get behind him. So I love that fight. I love the fact that one of those guys is going to get the opportunity, hopefully, to really fight overseas, to have a big broadcaster behind him, a big promoter behind him. And we're really going to see what he's made of. And, you know, as much as I love Jazza and I want Jazza to win, of course, I certainly wouldn't begrudge Ryan Walsh getting that opportunity either, because he's a nice kid. All those three brothers are nice kids. And it'd be nice to see him get an opportunity. But let's be honest, the Needle Wednesday comes at super lightweight.
Damn right.
O'Hara Davis, Tyron McKenna. Mate, that is a fight. I can't wait. And I've got to be honest. Listen, O'Hara's been so controversial in the past and outspoken. And, you know, I think sometimes he says things that, you know, he doesn't really think through. I think he's a bit naive. And he's been caught out and he's had to swap promoters and managers and trainers because of it all. Mm-hmm. But I think deep down, he's a nice kid. He can certainly punch. But I've got to be honest, Tyron McKenna's absolutely smashed it these last few weeks. His social media has just been ridiculous. The videos he's been making. If you haven't seen it, go and find Tyron McKenna on Twitter and look at the promotional videos he's been making. The guy is an absolute diamond. And I just think if you can get Tyron McKenna to the next level with a Top Rank behind him, in world class, with the mind that he's got, the charisma that he's got, the saleability, fucking hell, he could be a superstar. He could be an absolute superstar.
Yeah, man, he'd be banging. And this kind of strengthens our argument, doesn't it, for tournament fighting. We're living in a world where politics and bullshit seems to get in the way of all the best against the best. Obviously, the World Boxing Super Series has set the way. We've had some wonderful fights over the last few years. We've had guys crowned as undisputed champions. And fair play to MTK with this golden contract because, yeah, all right, it's a smaller version of the World Boxing Super Series. It's used guys within their stable, but it has pitted guys against each other that 9 times out of 10, you wouldn't get them against each other because somebody would find a way of getting out of it because, oh, he's got to be on this broadcaster or he's got to be on this or he's got to be on that. MTK are really making some serious waves when it comes to putting on stellar fights, matchup fights. Yep. And this golden contract has been an absolute breath of fresh air, a real revelation. And I think Wednesday night will be brilliant. You've just named two fights there, mate, that are absolutely fucking fights of the week for me. I mean, I know that Zepeda's fighting Baranchik at the end of the week over in the States, which is a great fight. I'm really excited about that one too. But I think Wednesday night is going to give us some absolute, absolute bangers ahead of what could be a really good weekend because we've got Josh Buatsi back in action on Sunday. Look at this.
Yeah.
Weird days this week. We got Wednesday night and we got Sunday night this week in the UK to get excited.
Yeah, very strange, man. Very strange. Listen, the good thing about the golden contract, and again, you've said it all about MTK there, doing some stellar work, and especially Lee's a grinder, man. Lee's the guy that makes it happen over at MTK with their live shows, and I just hope it goes off without a hitch. What we are guaranteed is two great fights. Again, I think they're both so well matched. You know, Cam McKenna outbox the puncher in Davis. Ryan Walsh, Jazza Dickens, both of them can bang for their size. Both of them can box. Both of them know how to go into the trenches as well. I think Wednesday night's going to steal the show this week. For me, it's the standout event. Yeah. But the standout performance, I'm sure, will come on Sunday from Josh Buatsi. And hopefully, I'd like to see him rock the mic. And we talked about crossover fights. Frank put it on the table. Eddie said we're going to have a dinner about it. I don't know whether you've actually sat down and managed to have dinner together yet because of the lockdown restrictions and Boris and the rest of those gremlins. But Buatsi getting a big finish against Kalich. and then calling out Anthony Yard, and let's have that first Matchroom Sports Frank Warren crossover, please.
Mate.
I think we could see it Sunday night. We could see it really gain some momentum Sunday night.
Listen, you're right. That's the fight that we all want. But you've met Josh Buatsi. He's the nicest dude outside of the ring in the whole of the world of boxing. He's a savage once the bell goes. Once it's just him and the other dude in there, he's an absolute savage and he'll take the kid's head off. But once it's microphone time, there isn't a more respectful dude in the world. You know full well that he ain't going to get mouthy. It would be amazing if he did, but he ain't going to do that. It's up to, like you've just said, Frank and Eddie, let's get together and let's try and make that fight, because and this is another thing that annoys me a touch. Everybody seems to talk about those two. Buatsi Yard, Buatsi Yard, Buatsi Yard. Why are we not mentioning Callum Johnson? Callum Johnson's in this mix as well, man. He is most certainly an elite level light heavyweight. So even if you make Buatsi Johnson or you make Johnson Yard, I don't give a shit. What one combination of those three, let's go.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And Callum seems to be the guy who fits in the middle at the moment as well, because he seems the guy that's most versatile in terms of getting them on different cards and whatever else. So you're right, man, it's certainly not a double act. It's absolutely a triple round robin. And any of those fights I'm down for, 100% down for. It seems like Buatsi is going to go the WBA route, though. And obviously Yard is no doubt going to pursue the WBO title, which is now vacated by Canelo. So, and you know, I get it. I think if you wait off for 18 months, it could be a next, you know, Ben Eubank, Steve Collins mix, couldn't it? It could be a little mix of those three.
There's some killers,
and those three could earn a fortune. But all they need is one belt. If Yard can pick up the WBO, fights Callum Johnson, the winner fights Buatsi, the winner fights the loser of the first fight. These guys could round robin it, absolutely put the light heavyweight division on the map in the UK. And you can't argue with the fact that, you know, they're making a fortune, you know, outside of a COVID putting people in the arena era. They could make a fortune fighting off against each other and define their legacies against one another. The three of them are world class.
Killer division as well, isn't it, with Beterbiev, Bivol, and all those types of characters too.
Well, that's what I mean. You don't need to throw no Eastern Europeans in the mix. Just let these three knock each other all over the place for a bit first. But yeah, man, listen, what it is as well, it's time for Buatsi to just come back and remind us boxing fans how good he actually is.
Yeah. Chantel Cameron in action as well this weekend. Looking forward to her doing her thing. It should be a good one. Sunday night, brilliant, straight after the footy. Get stuck into a little bit of that. Bit of Wednesday night action as well. And as I've just mentioned, there's a Peter and Baranchik are going at it over in the States. So make sure you dip into that. Find yourself a stream, it looks like, doesn't it? Because no British broadcast is picking that bad boy up. So find something, get it watched, and come and join us next week as we pick the bones out of everything. Thank you very much for listening to us. It's been an absolute pleasure once again. You can get everything that you need on iTunes, Fight Disciples. You can also get it on our website, fightdisciples.com, if you need a Spotify or an Android feed. All the links are there to YouTube and to the shop and various other things. Thank you very much if you've been buying some proper tackle. I know that it's going down extremely well. You'll be pleased to know that I still haven't got a crate as of yet. So if you're out there enjoying yourself, laugh all you want, lad. People keep tagging me in posts going, it's good drop this, mate. I wouldn't know.
I'll get you a four-pack sent out today. Don't worry.
A four-pack. His fridge is full. Anyway.
It was.
Anyway, there you go. Get yourself stuck in. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, and we'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.